listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
And welcome into the Repartee for your Tuesday afternoon. Hey, it's my old day when I used to host the Repartee. I'm now the Thursday host, but you got me today along with Sam Turnberg, who's also filling in. Switching up the schedule a little bit this week. How you doing, Sam?
Not too bad. Trying to confuse everyone from last Friday and then today.
Yeah, exactly.
Switching it up.
Yeah, a little switch up here. If you're not aware, Doug Padgett is going to be out for at least most of this week. I think he is coming back on Friday, but right now he's over in Los Angeles doing some activities to try to take over the DNC. Gotta love that. So, taking over the DNC, that's why Doug's not hosting today, but we're hoping later in the week, maybe tomorrow or Thursday, we could actually have Doug call in and let us know what he's up to. He was a little ambiguous on what exactly he was doing, but he said, going to be super busy trying to take over the DNC. So
it's still top secret, confidential at this point.
Yeah, very top secret. Either way, I hope he succeeds because it certainly beats the DNC we had back in 2016. I guess our 2018 DNC wasn't too bad. They did lead us to some victories. But good luck with that there, Doug. Hopefully he can have success taking over that DNC. Lots in the news today. And coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about the Minnesota State Legislature, primarily here during the first half of the show. Coming up in segment two, we're going to play part two of our conversation with Representative Tim Mahoney about this big omnibus bill that's going through the House right now that has a lot of great progressive legislation. When we interviewed him and played that back on Friday, I believe it was. No, it was actually last Thursday, I should say. We mainly focused on some topics with the environment that's in this big bill. But today we're going to play part two of that interview where we're going to highlight wage theft and then also paid safe and sick time as well. So that's going to be coming up in the segment two of our show today, our interview with Representative Tim Mahoney. And speaking of safe and sick time, well, if the Minnesota State Senate gets its way, that might no longer be a thing in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. That is because preemption has unfortunately reared its ugly head again. Now, if you're not familiar with preemption is, it's basically the state being able to tell a local city that the laws you passed are no longer valid. It's actually the state laws that supersede what you're able to do. Republicans have been trying to do this, not just in Minnesota, but all over the country to basically undo local minimum wage ordinances, where, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul recently passed $15 an hour minimum wage. Well, basically the state wants to step in, at least Republicans in the state legislature want to step in and say, no, you can't do that. You have to recognize the state's minimum wage because that supersedes what your local minimum wage is. So why are we talking about that and how it relates to safe and sick leave? Well, a provision in the Senate Jobs, Energy, and Commerce budget would stop cities from requiring higher minimum wage or sick time for workers that are different than what is already in state law. Now, here's the key of this, because originally Senate Republicans tried to kind of sneak this into this bill. The proposal would be retroactive to 2017, which just happens to be when Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul passed this progressive legislation.
Conveniently.
Yeah, exactly. And would undo minimum wage and other laws passed in those cities. Now, what's interesting about this is that when they were talking about this, I believe, on a Senate floor, they were saying this was going to be as of 2019. They were going to say anything passed after 2019 would be superseded by state law. But they kind of snuck this in there and said, no, it's actually going to be 2017. They snuck this in the bill really without telling anyone, even though they were trying to pass this off as saying, no, it's only going to be as of now. So it would essentially undo all of these laws. It will keep Minnesota labor laws uniform, said State Senator Eric Pratt, who's a Republican from Prior Lake and the chief sponsor of the bill. A patchwork of regulation poses a real threat to commerce in the state. Now, of course, the DFL has tried to fight this in the state Senate as Senator Jason Isaacson offered an amendment to remove the preemption sections that would nullify Duluth's paid leave policy and Minneapolis and St. Paul's wage laws. But that amendment largely failed along party lines, 36-31. Now, here's why I think Republicans have to be kind of careful with this, because Illinois did something interesting a few weeks ago where it was actually Democrats who used preemption to undo what will be seen as Republican and conservative-friendly legislation. We talked a little bit about this last week, but here's what happened in the state of Illinois, which, by the way, they just reverted to unified Democratic control, where they have a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a newly elected Democratic governor. What happened in Illinois was that there was this suburb of Chicago that decided to make their city right to work, even though the state of Illinois is not right to work. So what happened was the Illinois state legislature, along with their governor, passed their own preemption law, which undid this local ordinance in this Chicago suburb, which made their city right to work. So kind of got to be careful there if you're Republican, because Democrats could actually use this against you as well. My position kind of is I don't like when the Republicans do this, and I actually don't like it when the Democrats did this as well in the state of Illinois. I think we got to be consistent on that. But there we go, an example of how it can come back and burn you as well with these preemption laws. So unfortunately for the Republicans here in Minnesota, probably not going to go anywhere since we have a DFL-controlled House and, of course, Governor Tim Walz, who would pretty much veto any legislation that would have preemption in it. But there you go. It is, again, rearing its ugly head. Thought we were done with that after the past few legislative sessions when we had that GOP-controlled House and Senate trying to get those preemption bills in there. Also in the news in the state legislature, gun reform has made its way out of the Minnesota State House as Minnesota DFLers slid two controversial gun control measures. Actually, I don't like the way the AP writes this. It's not gun control. It's gun safety or gun reform. Don't you kind of agree with that, Sam? It's not gun control. That name always kind of drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's that branding that they like to use and make it sound like it's we're trying to control the people or –
yeah,
it's reform. It's absolutely reform.
And give the NRA and other groups credit for calling it gun control, because you automatically get these very negative thoughts in your head when you think control. Well, I don't want to be controlled. Anyways, that's besides the point, though. So DFLers slid two controversial gun safety measures into a must-pass spending bill, daring Senate Republicans to hold a vote. The DFLer said they had little choice but to include both measures, which are universal background checks and extreme risk protective orders, because the Senate would have blocked standalone bills. But their thinking is, and this is kind of the strategy on the DFL House members, is that by putting them in a public safety omnibus package, they'll force negotiations with the other chamber, which of course is the Senate, which has a 3-seat Republican majority. And this is what House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, friend of the show, who we've had on many times for our legislative update, he says either the Senate wants to vote for it or it does not. It is as simple as that. Now, here are the two restrictions that we're talking about, or reforms, as I like to call it. One of the restrictions would require a background check before any gun sale or transfer, except to immediate family members. Now, I want to dive into that and see what's exactly classified as an immediate family member. I guess maybe if it's a son, daughter, father, mother, maybe that would be okay. But I don't know if like a cousin, a second cousin, aunt, uncle, sometimes you don't really know what's necessarily going on with them. So I could see that definitely leading to some negative consequences if you were to sell them and not do a background check. And by the way, background checks are not exactly hard to do. And if you've done nothing wrong, to kind of steal an old line, you have nothing to hide.
Yeah, who's really afraid of a background? If you're afraid of a background check, you probably shouldn't get a gun.
Yeah, exactly. And then this other provision, this gun safety reform, the other provision would allow police to take guns from people deemed by a judge to be threats to themselves or others. Again, another good piece of legislation right there, although I can see libertarians saying, oh, we don't want the big bad government deciding. I think the police are going to abuse that. I don't know. Maybe there could be some cases with that. But I think it would be well worth the cost of getting that reform in there, preventing a domestic abuser, for example, from actually getting a gun.
And isn't that even only just like a temporary like restriction too? Like the eventually if the person can be deemed healthy or
– Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if they can go back and prove that, no, I'm not a threat to society or themselves. Yeah, they can go ahead and purchase the gun. So
it's not even like – government taking their guns. It's just saying, hey, maybe you should cool off a little bit right now.
Yeah, and I don't quite get what the rush is of needing a gun immediately, because that's exactly what a background check does. You wait a little time, then you get your gun if you pass your background check, I should say. I don't know why you necessarily need your gun right this second, but apparently that's the holdup right there. So we're going to have to see what happens with gun reform. But I do like the strategy that they took in the House in at least forcing negotiations on this bill, because what's interesting is that we look at the Republican Senate. A lot of these Senate districts, well, I shouldn't say a lot. There's several of them, enough to possibly flip control in 2020. But there are a number of these districts in the Senate that are controlled by a Republican, but they have two DFL House members, because the way the state legislature works is that we have 67 senators and 134 House members. If you do the math, that's of course twice as many House members as Senate members, and basically there's two House districts within each Senate district. Now, a lot of these Senate districts have a Republican senator right now, but two DFL House members. Now, the reason that actually happened was because none of the Republican-controlled Senate or any of the DFL senators were up for election in 2018, with the exception of that one special election, because I've never liked the way we do elections in the state Senate here in this state, because the chamber's only up for re-election every 4 years. I'd actually kind of like to see that staggered like they do in the U.S. Senate, where you actually have the chamber being held accountable every single election cycle, even though not necessarily everyone is up for re-election. But that's a discussion for a later time. So there's some news of what's happening in the state legislature. We're going to take a deeper dive into this omnibus bill that was recently passed in the DFL state-controlled House with Representative Tim Mahoney. Again, we're going to play part two of our interview coming up on the other side of the break, where we dive more into these provisions in this bill that have to do with wage theft and also safe and sick time. That's on the way next here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hello, this is Andrew Yang, Democratic candidate for president, and you're listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at Victor's1959Cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hey, this is Rick Shiomi from Full Circle Theater Company, and I hope you can join us for Repartee. That's the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're speaking with Representative Tim Mahoney from District 67A about the jobs and energy bill. And we're just talking about jobs a second ago, and I want to move on to another provision of this bill, and that is wage theft, because the Minnesota Department of Labor recently has said that at least 39,000 Minnesotans report having their wages stolen each year by their employers. Of course, that's a lot of people. So can you explain some of the scenarios in which people aren't getting paid? Because I think it's easy for, you know, someone who doesn't know a lot about this bill just to assume, well, that's simple. That's just an employer not paying their employer, delivering them a paycheck. But it's a lot more complicated than that, isn't it, Representative Mahoney, in terms of working off the clock or not paying overtime or other issues like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and I'll start with the ones that most people don't even think about. So you're a commissioned salesman or saleswoman that doesn't really notice that, you know, oh, I was supposed to get 3% of my sales and I'm really only getting 2.75. You don't even notice it sometimes. And I'll go back to the construction worker that doesn't see he or she did not get, you know, they got straight hours rather than overtime hours for a couple hours a week, or didn't get any overtime for the week that they would have typically have gotten, all the way down to, we have a number of people not from this country that live in this state. And whether they're here legally or undocumented, they get a little worried. You know, the bosses will report to the INS if you complain. Or someone working in the hotel or restaurant industry, the roofers, quite regularly, they don't get their paycheck on the week that they're supposed to get it. And sometimes that's made up, but more often than not, the boss will say, well, you know, I told you I was going to pay you $10 an hour, but I'm really, you know, I'm kind of short this week. We settle for $8 an hour. And that is wage theft. Now, and if they complain, they're either fired or given the most dangerous job, or the boss carries through on his threat to call the INS. And so they run away and they never get any of their check. So there's a whole gamut of ways that people get money stolen from them. They get, you know, you got to clock in 15 minutes before your shift starts. So you've got to be all ready and dressed and, have your tools in hand to start right away, versus, you know, you clock in, you go get your tools and you walk to where you're going to work. I mean, especially if it's, you know, a hotel or a work site, you have to go a half a mile with your tools. Are you supposed to do that on your own time or not? I think there was a court case that said that you had, there's some certain rules around that. And in the state of, in our state, our wage theft bill, really kind of tries to, you know, there's a lot of consternation about, you know, well, what about the employer? Well, right now as it is today, the employer is in the driver's seat. So if I'm an inspector and I get a call from somebody that says that so-and-so isn't paying me, my only ability is to call up the employer and say, can you turn over your records to me so I can determine if you are taking money or not? And the employer says, no, you can't have any of my records. There's really nothing the inspector can do. Now, in the wage theft bill, we're going to give the Department of Labor and Industry the ability to have a subpoena power to go in and interview and copy records and take any notes or anything else that they need in order to make a determination. We actually put a fine on if an employer refuses to give up their records for them to use, to take a look at. And then there's a subpoena. they actually, in rare instances, will have the ability to go to court and get a court order to be entered, to be allowed into the business. This particular law requires businesses to keep records. I talked to one inspector, orderly records. The person said, sure, you can have my records. And he brought in a box, you know, the typical thing you see at the IRS where the guy comes in with this big box of records and dumps it on the table and says, here you go, figure it out. And no one's ever going to figure that out.
Right.
Because they just don't have the time. We also in this bill are trying to make it so that, you know, if I go to my boss and say, hey, you didn't pay me for one of the days I worked last week, and the boss is really just a jerk, he says, oh, yeah, I did. No, go prove it. And by the way, you're now, I'm going to cut your hours, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to fire you. That's a retaliation. And we really put it into this bill that you don't get to retaliate against an employee that makes a complaint about wage theft. It's really simple.
Yeah, and I think, I was going to say that's really important to put in that bill as well, because a lot of people who may be experiencing this, whether it's, having unpaid lunches or not getting paid for overtime, a lot of times, as you're saying, they are kind of scared to report this in fear of retaliation of, having their hours cut or even possibly having their job eliminated entirely.
Correct. And it happens all the time. We made it pretty difficult to, we made it simple to claim, not so simple that anybody could claim that, you know, you can't yell at your, so simple that you couldn't yell at your employee and say you did the wrong job. But we made it relatively simple and easy for Fred that complained about not getting any overtime payments and when he was due them, that if the boss fires him a week later, Fred can go in and say, you know, you retaliated against me and here's the law and you can't do that. And if you don't rectify this, I'm going to take it to the state and the state will make you rectify it. We also put in, you know, people think of wage theft as just nickels and dimes. Well, we've had a number of wage theft cases in the state that have been in the last year that have been pretty extensive and high dollar. So we made it a felony that you can go to jail for if you steal more than $35,000. We haven't, obviously haven't used that yet, but even if we can convict the people that were high dollar value thieves, unlikely to ever go to prison. But if you rob a bank of $1,000, you're going to jail. If you rob from your employees, you get to go to the Bahamas. If you rob from a bank, you go to jail.
We're speaking with Representative Tim Mahoney about the Jobs and Energy Bill. And one final issue I want to talk to you about, and this is also in the Jobs and Energy Bill, and that is safe and sick time reform. Because currently lawmakers say that more than 730,000 working people in Minnesota do not have access to paid sick time. So what exactly is on the books right now? Why is it inadequate? Because as I see it right now, I think only a handful of cities actually have laws in place in terms of getting paid sick time. What is the legislator trying to do to work to expand safe and sick time?
Well, we have that in this bill, and it's pretty standard. I mean, you work X number of hours, you get a couple hours or you get 1 hour of sick time, and that builds up over a month or 3 months or however long it takes to get if you had the flu, you couldn't go to work for a month or two and get enough time off to get over the flu. You have to put some time in. It also gives you the opportunity to take time off to go care for your young son or daughter who may have the flu. Because no mother or father likes to leave their kid with who? Who do you leave him with? And how does that make you feel when you know your son or daughter is just sick and waiting for you? So anyhow, yes, it's in the law or it's in the bill that you get to earn X number of hours for every number of hours you work. You build that up. We've made some exemptions. So like Delta Airlines asked us, you know, we do all that under federal law, and we pay for that sick time. It's very, very difficult to track someone flying an airplane from Minneapolis, St. Paul to Los Angeles. And here's the proof that we do it all. We said, just fine. You know, that makes sense. If you're underneath a program of that does all that, and we did that same thing with paid family leave. We gave the option if one of our big Fortune 500 companies already does that, they don't need our particular program. So we're trying to have on and off ramps for people in paid family leave and in sick and safe time. And we'll see where we go with that. The Senate has not heard a sick and safe time bill or a paid family leave. It's disappointing to me to see that they have not heard any of that. They have heard a pretty watered down, a very watered down wage theft bill. So as we get ready to go into conference, it's going to be, it will be difficult to get people to get that through, but we're going to work really, really hard at getting both paid family leave, sick and safe time, and wage theft through.
Yeah, hopefully we see some movement on that once it goes into the committee. We've been speaking with Representative Tim Mahoney from District 67A about the Jobs and Energy Bill because there are lots of important provisions in those bills. Representative Mahoney, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Oh, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so very much.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Again, it's Brett and Sam in today on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears and open up the phone lines because I want your thoughts on this, and I'm going to share mine as well, and so will Sam, because we have a lot in the news in terms of naming controversies. Of course, we recently saw what happened with Bede Makuska, and then also we've seen the U of M with their buildings in the news, as well as Fort Snelling. And I think we need to have a conversation about the context in which people are honored and having monuments named after them. We need to take into context what happened to them historically. Were they a good person? Were they a bad person? What were their legacies? I think it's an important conversation to have, and we're going to have that up next on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
Hi, this is Candy from Green Tea Conversations, Sunday at 10 a.m., and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
The Minneapolis Farmers Market has the best selection of plants for your gardens, the freshest produce, meats, and farmstead goods. You'll find meat vendors, some homestead vendors, and greenhouse vendors in the early part of spring. Plus, there will be fresh produce when the weather gets warmer. The Hennepin County Government Center Market is open Tuesdays. The Nicollet Mall Market is open on Thursdays. And the 312 East Lindell Market is open daily from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. More details at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Metz inviting you to listen to my radio show, The Wall of Power Radio Hour, every weekend on AM 950. We feature cool people from all walks of life and from all 50 states. In 4.5 years, we have featured musicians, actors, politicians, homicide cops, record stores, Metzowocumentaries, Bob Dylan's first drummer, and more. Every weekend on AM 950, 6 p.m. on Saturday, 4 p.m. on Sunday.
As a family-owned business, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has been serving the Twin Cities since 1930. A new furnace or air conditioner from Standard Heating and Air can lower your monthly utility bills, administer more consistent temperatures, and even improve indoor air quality, making your home safer and healthier for the whole family. The average heating and cooling system lasts 15 to 20 years. So if yours is on its last legs, call Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
The Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates and private dining room for parties available. Located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
It's the age of artificial intelligence. 85-year-old Marjorie, a jumble of disparate, fading memories, has a handsome new companion, me, a hologram who's been programmed to feed her the story of her life back to her. If given the chance, what would you remember? What would you forget? Jordan Harrison's new play explores the mysteries of human identity and what technology offers. Prime Productions presents the play Marjorie Prime at St. Paul's Park Square Theater. Performances run April 19th to May 19th. For tickets, visit parksquaretheater.org.
Hi, this is Charlie. Dad, do I have to say this next line?
How much can you get for a used Xbox?
Fine. My father is the voice of his generation, Matt McNeil.
Fantastic!
My dad loves me driving the Toyota Sienna, and the Sienna is incredibly reliable. While my dad drives the new one, mine is over 10 years old and still runs great.
A vehicle with amazing reliability, an incredible service department, and the Luther Advantage card, you get that with Rudy Luther Toyota. We're a two Sienna family thanks to Rudy Luther, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Tonight it's rainy with a low around 40. Tomorrow will be cloudy with a high near 51. Thursday, cloudy with a high near 57. Friday, cloudy with a high near 65. And Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 72. The Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week is Burger Moe's. They offer 20 fresh, never frozen varieties, as well as delicious apps, soups, salads, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Visit them at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, or more information at burgermoes.com.
An info warrior and ignore everything these Soros puppets say. Hunter, Doug, and Brett spread Obama, globalist, Antifa propaganda. Ignore everything you hear on the Minnesota Progressive Liberty.
Friend of the show, Alex Jones on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. He by far, Sam, the most high-profile guest we've ever gotten on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Yeah, I was so surprised he was willing to do it, you know. It didn't seem like his shtick, but hey.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen videos of Alex Jones lately. They're, of course, tough to find now that he's been deplatformed, but he is really having quite an emotional breakdown. He just overall physically doesn't look very good. People have been – I don't watch his videos, but I've heard other people say that he's not even coherent anymore because at least in the past when he was spouting off his conspiracy theories, he – was at least understandable in terms of being able to talk articulately, not, of course, actually making any sense in terms of what he was talking about with his conspiracy theories. But now he's just kind of a jumbled mess. So there you go. Alex Jones not going through some good times. But he's always welcome on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Have to see if we can get him on a better phone line next time, I suppose.
I think he's trying to keep his – he doesn't want us to triangulate his location or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
We might be in on the conspiracy.
Yeah, we are the Soros media, as he says, aren't we? In fact, George Soros actually sent us our talking points before the show today, so we're going to be following those to a T and not deviating one bit. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So let's dive into this debate about the renaming of Lake Bonimacasca, now back to Lake Calhoun, apparently. The State Court of Appeals ruled on Monday that the former Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Tom Landwehr exceeded his authority in 2018 when he changed the name of Lake Calhoun, which had existed for more than 40 years. Back in January of 2018, the DNR approved the new name, Bonimacasca, following months of debate against the change. But a three-judge panel reversed the ruling on Monday. So this ruling is basically now going to take an effect in 30 days, giving the DNR time to appeal the ruling, which is key because this ruling can be appealed. Although the DNR says it is considering whether to petition to the Minnesota Supreme Court to review that case. So what's interesting here is that the original name of the lake was actually Bonimacasca, not Calhoun. The Dakota originally called the lake Bonimacasca, which, by the way, means Lake White Earth or Lake White Bank, which was a name that was probably given by the Iowa who inhabited the area until the 16th century. Now, here's a funny thing about this. Matt mentioned this back on his show, was that this Save Lake Calhoun website was apparently hacked today, and it was a very simple hack. All they did was basically set it up where if you visit SaveLakeCalhoun.com, you just get text that says it's Bonimacasca and nothing else. So I found that kind of humorous that they were actually able to hack this thing. So basically what this appeals court ruled is that the name can be changed, but it has to be done by the Minnesota State Legislature. And already we have some representatives and senators that have jumped on this as Assistant Senate DFL leader Jeff Hayden, who is from Minneapolis, released the following statement after this morning's Finance Committee hearing. He says it's no secret John Calhoun's thoughts on slavery and segregation were appalling. Naming anything after a man like that is a decision that people made years ago when people like him weren't sitting in any position like this. We have an opportunity now to move away from some of the dark spots in our history and acknowledge the places, names that existed for generations before Calhoun ever set foot in the state of Minnesota. So he's trying to now actually get this passed through the state legislature so it can be changed officially. That is, of course, if the appeal, which likely will come to the state Supreme Court, ends up failing. So what I find interesting about this whole thing is that I hear a lot of people say who want to revert back to the name Lake Calhoun is that, well, yeah, John C. Calhoun was a terrible person, but, you know, that was kind of par for the course at the time, so we can't really judge historical figures when it was a norm back in the time to actually own slaves. And while they're right about that, I think they're missing part of the history about John C. Calhoun and actually how terrible a person he actually was. Matt brought this up the past couple of days on his show, and we're just going to briefly run through this as well. Because looking at the biography of John C. Calhoun, I really can't find anything positive that he contributed to the United States. Nothing at all. All I can find are negative things that he actually contributed to the country. Where areas where we sometimes hear the argument, well, if we rename Lake Calhoun, does that mean we have to rename anything that was named after Thomas Jefferson or George Washington? And to that I say no, because those guys, despite acknowledging the fact that they owned slaves, they actually did contribute some positive things to our country. Of course, George Washington, the first ever president of our country, obviously that's a good thing. And he made his very famous farewell address as well, which is still cited today by politicians. He, of course, did lots of positive things. Or how about Thomas Jefferson? He, of course, although he kept slaves, Jefferson is famed as a champion of political and religious freedom. He loved liberty in every form and worked for freedom of speech, press, religion, and civil liberties. So those two guys, yeah, they actually did positively contribute to our country, unlike John C. Calhoun. Now let's run through his history, and it's very ugly. Of course, he was very pro-slavery, and we're going to get into that more in a second, but he was also really bad in a lot of other areas as well. Let's start off with the War of 1812. He was a big proponent of the War of 1812. As he was one of the war hawks that was elected back in 2010, along with Speaker Henry Clay of Kentucky. And brushing aside vehement objections of both anti-war New Englanders and arch-conservatives Jeffersonians and John Randolphs, they demanded war against the Britain to preserve American honor and Republican values. Now, largely the War of 1812 didn't really go so well for the United States outside of a victory in New Orleans. We pretty much had our White House actually burned down by the British, and that's partially because John C. Calhoun was pushing for the War of 1812, so certainly not a good thing there. He was also foreshadowing and also a supporter. Well, he would have been a supporter if he was still around, but he was foreshadowing that this could happen, and it should happen, the secession of the Confederate States. In fact, Calhoun asserted that slavery, rather than being a necessary evil, was a positive good benefiting both slaves and slave owners. To protect minority rights against majority rule, and he's not talking about race when he refers to minority rights, he's talking about white southern states as the minority against the majority, he called for a concurrent majority whereby the minority could sometimes block proposals that it felt infringed on their liberties. And to this end, Calhoun supported states' rights and nullification, though through which states could declare null and void federal laws that they viewed as unconstitutional. And what a lot of these Confederate states did when they seceded from the Union were citing John C. Calhoun. So he was largely kind of a forefather of the Confederate States of America, which, of course, was an enemy of the United States of America. So we're not only honoring a guy who supported the War of 1812, which ended very poorly for the United States, but also a guy who supported and foreshadowed the secession of the Confederate States. Now, of course, let's get into slavery. Calhoun led the pro-slavery faction in the Senate, opposing both total abolition attempts and also limited attempts to blocked a provision which would have limited the expansion of slavery, I should say, into the Western territories. He, of course, also made his very infamous speech when he said slavery was not a necessary evil, but again, a positive good. And he rooted the claim on two grounds, that white supremacy and paternalism were important. And he said, all societies are ruled by an elite group that enjoys the fruits of the labor of a less exceptional group. That's what this guy wrote about. That was his belief.
You'd think that one line alone right there would just seal the deal for everybody.
All societies are ruled by an elite group that enjoys the fruits of the labor of a less exceptional group. That is John C. Calhoun, the man we're apparently going to name a lake after again.
Where are all the Republicans who hate the leftist elitists and who are, because they see themselves as the common person, the elite is run by the left? And
yeah, that's exactly what he's saying as well.
There's your guy, John C. Calhoun.
And then this was brought up on Matt's show, Calhoun's own treatment of his slaves, which includes an incident in 1831 when his slave Alec ran away when threatened with a severe whipping. Calhoun wrote to his second cousin and brother-in-law asking him to keep a lookout for Alec, and if he was taken, to have him severely whipped and sent back. And when Alec was captured, Calhoun wrote to the captor, "I am glad to hear that Alec has been apprehended, and I am much obliged to you for paying the expense of apprehending him." And basically he asked for him to, of course, be whipped. So there's some history on John C. Calhoun. A complete nasty guy, and not someone we should be naming something after, because obviously he's a terrible person and it's tough to find anything he positively contributed to the country. Unlike, again, going back to this argument where people say, well, that means we're going to have to rename monuments or streets or anything else that's named after Jefferson or Washington. While those guys owned slaves, they at least tried to contribute positively to this country. So there's that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Love your thoughts on this as well. We're going to get into some more thoughts that I have on this controversy. But first, let's go to David in Shakopee. Hey there, David.
Hey, I love that line about an elite group that rules over a less exceptional group. Mm-hmm. See, the problem is you guys think that Calhoun's a bad guy, but he's not. He's a hero. That's exactly what the Republicans want now. An elite group ruling over a less exceptional group. Isn't that what they always tell us? I mean, after all, the job creators, they're virtuous and wonderful, and the rest of us are just lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right there, David. A very good point to bring up. Thanks so much for the call there, David. Appreciate it. And yeah, just going back to that line, that is an insane line right there, that the elite should rule over people that they view as less exceptional. That is a really nasty line. Then, of course, the way he treated slaves as well. Now, we also hear this argument, too, that, well, if we get rid of the name Calhoun, we're erasing our history. And the question is the only way we learn about history by naming monuments after them? Because going by that logic, I guess we would know nothing about Timothy McVeigh unless we have Lake Timothy McVeigh. There's that. Or, to take it more extreme, Hitler or Stalin Street, do we know nothing about World War II unless we name monuments after them?
I'm pretty sure didn't Germany like outlaw naming anything after Hitler or the Nazis because they were smart enough to want to get away from that past?
Yeah, you're not erasing history by not naming monuments after historical figures. They're still in the history books. You can still learn about them because it seems to me when people make this argument by you're erasing our history, you're basically saying the only way you learn about history is by having a monument or a street or a lake named after someone. And that's not the way you learn about history, obviously. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Love to give your thoughts on this as well. Sam is busy there on the phones. Let's go to Robert Pilot, the host of Native Roots Radio, presents I'm Awake, which you can hear Saturdays from 1 until 3 p.m. Robert, I know you've been following this as an indigenous person yourself. What are your thoughts on this matter?
B'day Moskva. You know, hey, I was just at the Capitol and they voted on it and they put it in the DNR ominous bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's heading back. The Senate's going to vote on it next. And so that passed. But this is just a process. And the process right now is that a few angry people that live around the lake that have a lot of money are going after this. 80% of the state doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about erasing history. This is Dakota Lakota land, you know. I'm Ho-Chunk, but I know that. I know I'm on sacred land from the Dakotas and Lakotas. So I think, you know, with things will happen. And what's really been good about this whole thing is the Native Americans have been in this process. We have a couple House representatives like Mary Kanush Podine, and And we have people that are in the game now that are finding out what the process is. And, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to Minneapolis and Native American issues, we lead the way in the country. So people are wondering, they're talking to the Bean Sisters, how are you guys getting these names changed? What's happening there? It's all it is racism and people afraid. And so we just have to keep calm and do the step-by-step of what the law is out there, and things will happen right. But what's positive, again, is that Native Americans have never been in the process, never been in the game, and we're in the game now, and we're learning really quickly what we have to do. This is just part of the process with the lawsuit of the few people that live around that lake that are afraid to lose their heritage and their past, afraid to find out who they are. But it's a new time, and every, you know, these people will pass away someday, and we'll be wondering why we even talked about this, why this was even an issue. But right now it's just a bumpy road that a lot of Native leaders out there, like the Bean Sisters, are in the forefront, and they're doing it up really well, and I have good things for them. And I interviewed them right after the show, so that'll be on my show, Native Roots Radio. I'm awake on Saturday at 1 o'clock. But, you know, you get to hear these girls are really smart twins, mm-hmm. and they're out there doing their thing, and it's a positive thing. You know, it's a little bump in the road, but we're in the game now. Again, we never were in the game. We're in the game now. We have a couple of House representatives that are Native American and they have ancestry that are putting it out in the forefront.
Yeah, and I think, and thanks so much for the call there, Robert. Really do appreciate it. And you do bring up a good point that it has brought people into the system and learning about the process, because so often in our state and also the country as well, we forget about Native American issues. We kind of see them as being invisible, and it is important to make sure we shed limelight on them and know that, hey, Indigenous people are still here in this country. So, Robert, really appreciate the call, and make sure you tune into his program coming up on Saturday. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, which you can hear from 1 until 3 p.m. Also, watch it on Facebook. They have a massive Facebook following, so make sure you watch it there on as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up on the other side of the break, we'll share more thoughts on this renaming controversy and related to what's happening at the University of Minnesota and Fort Snelling as well. That's on the way next on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hello, this is Brett's grandmother. You are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
If you're someone that counts on AM 950 to bring you the latest in progressive politics, news, and talk, remember, we can't do it alone. Support our many great advertisers and let them know you heard about their business on AM 950. If you don't know who to talk to, simply write AM 950 on your receipt. AM 950 is supported by small, local businesses, so you're not only helping us and those businesses, but our local economy as well. For a complete list of our sponsors, log on to am950radio.com.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry, we're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Hi, Minnesota. It's Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
And it's Brett and Sam on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Just a few minutes left on the show. Love to give your thoughts on this naming controversy taking place at Lake Batimakaska and I guess now named Lake Calhoun again. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So the important thing to take away here is that you have to take John C. Calhoun in context as compared to someone like a Jefferson or a Washington. Again, a terrible person, pro-slavery, foreshadowed the Confederacy, and in fact was actually honored by the Confederate States. They used a lot of his speeches to actually justify seceding from the Union. So John C. Calhoun, not a good guy as compared to other slave owners, our founding fathers, a lot of them were, like a Jefferson or a Washington, who, despite having that, actually did positively contribute to our country. So I think that is something important to bring up in this debate.
And keep in mind, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, too, that we were talking about this. The road, the parkway is still named Lake Calhoun right. Parkway, I believe. And my best friend from Coon Rapids just called and didn't want to go on the air. But we walk around Calhoun all the time and or Batimakaska, I right. should say. And, but I see the street sign still. That so you still got your parkway named Calhoun.
So I guess if you're that obsessed about not erasing history, you still do have Calhoun Parkway.
Exactly.
And if you really want to learn about John C. Calhoun, I guess if you really want to follow that guy so closely, open a history book.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a lake named after him to actually know the history of John C. Calhoun. Now, quickly, just want to relate this to what's been happening at the University of Minnesota, because I think, again, context is very important, because the University of Minnesota wanted to change several of their buildings due to having some past presidents that buildings were named after that, in their time, backed segregation. Now, this is something I'm not an expert on, but, of course, unfortunately, in the 30s and 40s, I should say, segregation was a thing, and largely just about every college in the country was supporting segregation. So I think you do have to take that into context. I'd have to do more research on guys like Kaufman or such, but I think that is a much different case than like a John C. Calhoun, who is just a terrible person. It is a little bit of a different thing when you're looking at renaming some of these buildings at the University of Minnesota. Again, I'm not an expert on Kaufman and some of these other guys. I tried doing a little research on it today, but I think it's going to involve quite a bit more reading. But that's what I think is an important takeaway to make, is that you have to take these historical figures that have monuments, streets, lakes named after them. You have to take it into context where they were in history and also overall what kind of a person they were. Because again, Calhoun, terrible, terrible person. Well, that is all the time we have here today on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. It has been Brett and Sam filling in as Doug on the road taking over the DNC. Hopefully he'll be back coming up on Friday. Hunter Hawes, Eric Nelson going to be in for their regularly scheduled Wednesday on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.